Welcome to VoiceOver, Movies That Move Us. I'm your host, Heather Bigley, and I talk to people about the movies that made a mark that led to, if you will, cinematic epiphanies. And it's not always the movie you'd expect. Today's movie is The Wiz from 1978, which was adapted from the Broadway musical The Wiz, the super soul musical Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Coincidentally, the theatrical version of The Wiz is currently on tour again. The Wiz is a black reinvention of the popular 1939 MGM The Wizard of Oz, starring Judy Garland as Dorothy, whisked away from Kansas to a fantasy land of munchkins and witches. Diana Ross plays The Wiz's Dorothy, a single black woman surrounded by family at a happy Thanksgiving dinner. When she runs after her little dog Toto in a snowstorm, she's whirled away to an urban fantasyscape, a threatening place with sweatshops, blind alleys, and nightclubs, where Dorothy must save herself and the family she creates along the way. The Scarecrow is played by an ebullient Michael Jackson, barely 20 years old, and the Wizard is played by Richard Pryor, both delivering excellent performances. My guest today is Robert Monson, a writer, musician, and scholar who examines Black womanist and Black disability theologies. He is a host for two podcasts, Black Coffee and Theology and Three Black Men. And remember to stick around after the convo for some recommendations. If you're going to recommend The Wiz to someone, what would you say to them? What would be the persuasive sentence or two that you would say?
So I just did this. So a friend was in town. He was like, I know you've talked about The Wiz a lot. Should we watch it? I said, it is precious to me. I don't know that it will be precious to you. But I think he was already willing. What I would tell people, what I told him is, you will understand me a lot better if you watch this movie. He was like, all right, let's turn it off. I think, you know, so there's that selfish interpersonal portion of, I think you will understand me and a whole generation of people who were formed out of this movie and around this movie. This taught us ethics and spirituality. And once he saw it, he was like, I do get you a lot more. So even my quirkiness and weirdness, he said, wow, I understand you 10 times better than before I watched this movie. So that's what I would say. Yeah.
We had sixth grade choir. Our choir teacher was black, and she made sure we got schooled. Like, we learned lift every voice and sing. There were certain things she was going to make sure we knew. Mm-hmm. And The Wiz was one of them. But it was so long ago that when I watched it, it was as if I was watching a brand new movie. And I thought, was I terrified? Because it's kind of a scary movie, Robert.
It is. To this day. It is. To this very day, it is indeed.
So, you tell me, when did you first see this movie and what were your first reactions?
Growing up as a black child in the 80s, I thought everyone saw The Wiz. So I can't even say the first time that I saw it, because I'll put it this way. When I finally saw The Wizard of Oz, I thought The Wizard of Oz was based on The Wiz.
Of course.
That's how normal it was in my home. Like, it is a point of reference. So before I can even remember, is the first time I saw it. So it was just every year, at least twice a year, most black kids saw it. And then I remember it scaring me as early as I could remember. That subway scene alone is frightening. All of my childhood memories are anchored around The Wiz. It was part of a canon-forming event for growing up as a black child. There were so many themes of unity, bravery, learning how to be brave, and a spirituality that transcends communities that I think was always present in The Wiz that allowed me to always come away each time I watched it as a kid, knowing that family is important and that I could learn to be brave, because I've been a fearful person my whole life. So I resonated with Dorothy a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And she seems terrified from the first frame that she enters. Like, she is scared. And there's that line about, but you haven't even been below 180
or something. Girl, do you know you're 24 years old and you've never been south of 125th Street? Well, you haven't.
And she's like, I don't need to go below 185th. Thank you very much. Well, talk to me about what those other canonical texts are. If this is one of them, it would be interesting to know, like, what this is in dialogue with.
For me, let's see, the Roots. We all grew up watching Roots and the depiction of slavery there. LeVar Burton, among others, starring in that. So that formed the basis of what I thought about slavery. Malcolm X, the movie, when it came out, that was canon forming for survival and thriving. And then in my nerdiness, Star Wars, the original trilogy, was part of it. So, so it's like there's these very serious movies that I'm watching. Then The Wiz and Star Wars is on the other end of the spectrum. So all of those were in dialogue with making me who I was as a child and who I am today.
I don't have a memory of seeing Roots until I was a senior in high school.
Wow.
So that would have been 92, 93. And it was because I took an African American history class as an elective in high school. And again, it was like, hey, you need to be acquainted with this, right? Yeah. You know, the work that those teachers did. This is slightly tangential, but, you know, I grew up in Maryland, so I had Black teachers, and it wasn't until...
You probably had more than me, actually. I grew up in Chicago and didn't have any, so...
Well, it wasn't until I was in my, I want to say, early 40s, and I actually read about what happened to Black teachers during integration, that I was like, oh, wow, like, it's kind of a miracle that I had... Black teachers.
It's unique.
I'm really grateful that they were present and were like, listen, little white kids, like, this is what you need to know.
Exactly.
So you're talking about spirituality here. Tell me about that. Tell me why you see this as a spiritual film or spiritual experience.
So for me, when people use the word spirituality, oftentimes in the American context, they are locating the force of that around Christianity. And not that that can't be spirituality, but for me, it isn't where my spirituality starts and ends. And so growing up as an atheist in Chicago, I absolutely had experiences that were spiritual. I had thoughts around community and love and self-care and communal care and what it means to be in right relation to one another. That didn't start later in my life. Like, that started as an atheist on the south side of Chicago. And so because of that, I tend to have an expanded view of spirituality in the experiences that have traces of the divine. And so in the opening scene, this Black family gathered singing to one another about love.
Put your arms around the child, like when you bumped your shin. Then you'll know I love you now, as I love you then.
There's a spiritual ethic that is there around what it means to break bread with one another and to have a ritual of celebration with every, you know, man, woman, child, and the dog is there too. But that communal care that was wound throughout that taught me about what love can look like when we are in right relationship to one another. And then the journey that Dorothy goes on to not just uncover her bravery in her way back home, but she is willing to sacrifice speed to get to where she's going to care for others, the least of these, you know, to use biblical language. She's willing to care for the least of these on this sojourn to get to the Wiz, and hopefully the Wiz can bring her home. But she has audacity in the spiritual ethic that she's forming in this journey and this quest because she just believes that the Wiz is going to grant requests to her friends.
You could come with us to see the Wiz. He's going to get me back home, and he's going to get the Scarecrow some brains. Maybe he could get you a heart.
No one has promised her that. Right. We don't even know if she's going home. But she has this audaciousness to say, no, come with me. We'll take care of one another and we'll get you what you need too. And that is spirituality at its best, right? Like that's a praxis of spirituality that's working in the everyday life. That is beyond the pew or beyond Bible study. It's living on the ground is what we do with what we believe.
I think it's important to say how different that opening is from The White Wizard of Oz. Dorothy is by herself. She's afraid. She's being chased, or she's trying to get home. The family is somewhat fragmented, right? So we have the workers who kind of gather around her and want to talk to her, and we have Auntie M and Uncle Henry who are separated in space, in the space of the film. She doesn't actually seem to have a support system that's going to, you know, help her. Whereas when we see Diana Ross's Dorothy, as you said, she's gathered about all of these different people, different ages, different relationships with each other, and they form this community around her, and she doesn't actually want to leave.
I can't see how going south of 125th Street ever made anybody's life better.
And you're never going to know unless you try. Are you?
Right.
Her idea is not, I need to get to this other place. Her idea is, this is good, and I want to stay here. And then the film is about like returning to that richness and that community, which the White Dorothy and the White Wizard of Oz is a different trajectory altogether.
Yeah, and I think that's why it was shocking when I finally did watch The Wizard of Oz, because there was something beautiful in The Wiz with both the music and this community that she's coming from and she co-creates in this journey. It's this organic co-creation of community, which spoke to me as a Black person, right? Like, I know the ways that we create organic community. And so as she comes from somewhere, she comes from a people. Yes, she's going back to that people, but all along the way, she learns how to make family with strangers. And I think that that's so beautiful. You see her making family everywhere she goes because of the tutelage of the family that she came from. And I think I was shocked by how lonely Wizard of Oz felt in comparison.
Well, I was thinking about this, like, we're dwelling a lot on that opening scene, but I think that opening scene is so beautiful. But also there are little things, like there's the couple that's making out in the bedroom and Auntie
Em. That happened at family functions too. Like y'all, is not all holy every day. I mean, come on. Y'all
she
know.
Goes and gathers them. And I thought to myself, it's not like they get upset with her and they're like, get out. You know, I think I was thinking about this idea of community and how so often in our media, when we see a family, the family is fractured, the family is dangerous, the family is stunting, and there's no sense that actually being in community and taking correction when needed and being guided is a helpful thing, being mentored is a helpful thing. It's more that I have to escape my family to become who I truly am.
Yes.
Right? And so here's something from 50 years ago saying the family is beautiful and rich and safe.
It's beautiful. And I love what you're saying, because I think the other thing that I appreciated about it, it doesn't center the nuclear family.
Right.
Everything that you're saying, everyone is gathered there. And even when they have to dole out the correction, it is just like how a Black family would, you're not supposed to be back here. But then you're never questioning that love is present. You're never questioning that you're a part of this expanded circle of people who love you and want the best for you. We're all gathered here. And I think that that is such a beautiful depiction of what many people come from. They might not come from a two-parent home with the dog and the cat, right? Like in the white picket fence. But many of us come from extended units where we saw our uncles, our cousins, our aunts all gathered regularly.
Can you take these checks?
Come on, Henry. Come on.
Take your uncle's
checks. Oh, man. That's the way you check his win games. Yeah, what are you doing?
Why do you have to go?
So why do you keep coming back to the film? As an adult, why would, when I say, hey, Robert, what movie could you talk about? You were like, The Wiz or Wakanda Forever. Like, those were the two. And I was like, that's interesting. An adult man is saying to me, this is a text that I want to return to and discuss.
I think, you know, I return to it often. I am a deeply curious person. In part, yes, I'm a scholar in religion, but bigger than religion or theology or what people believe about the universe, God, and the afterlife, I am curious about the texts that inform you. You are a byproduct of a bunch of stories. Some of those are fictional stories. Some of those are parents told you stories about yourself. Some of those are stories you've made up, right? So we're all these collection of stories, and The Wiz is part of my story. And I go back to it often because it feels like home to me. Now, obviously, they sing a famous song there about home. But I think it was the first time that it made sense to me. I saw Black people on the screen making a home in ways that felt resonant for me. And I think much of the media I consumed did not have that. And so I keep going back because that's the first time I felt a spark of home and my imagination got to run wild for a time. And then you end up right back where you started from. And so much of my thoughts as I write, whether it's for an academic journal or I'm writing poetry, I actually will think of scenes from The Wiz will float back to my mind. That's part of my first native language, so to speak. So
let's talk a little bit about what happens in the movie. Dorothy is going to try to rescue Toto. She ends up in a storm. She gets whisked away to Oz. She doesn't know where she is. But her first act is to rescue the Scarecrow and teach him who he is, in a way, and stand up for him against the bullies, these Black Crows who are bullying him.
I'll help you down.
What? You will?
And once she kind of saves him is to continually talk to him about who you are and what you're connected to. And this is well before the final scene when she's going to say to each of her new friends, you are brave. You do have a heart.
But I'll never get my brain.
No, my heart. Or my courage.
But you don't need them now. Because you've had them all along.
Like, she's doing this teaching throughout the film and just kind of reassuring everyone. Did you see yourself in Dorothy?
I did. I really, really did. I grew up, I'm a scaredy cat. There's seven of us children. And I was an instigator, but a scaredy cat at the same time. And so I resonated actually with all of the characters, if I'm honest. I always had, as she's helping all the different ones, whether it's the Scarecrow or the Lion recover his bravery or the Tin Man realize that he has a heart, I saw elements of myself in each character because I felt too, with the Scarecrow, I felt like I was not smart enough. I still struggle with that being in academia today, right? And so, yes, I absolutely resonated with Dorothy for sure.
Yeah. On one note, it's just so lovely to see Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
So young and beautiful, right? And
yes.
So full of life.
Woo! Come on, Dorothy! Come on!
Woo! I think it's his first film, and he's so good in it.
He He is. And it actually makes me sad because of how troubled his life became.
But yeah.
You're right. Seeing him at this stage in his life where he was so full of life is bittersweet for me because I know it didn't end that way for him. And his dancing is incredible.
So the Scarecrow and the Tin Man and the Lion, I'm wondering, I mean, you're opening up a new reading for me that perhaps when we look at these four characters, we should be thinking of how altogether they create like this complete person.
Because I think as she's journeying with each one of them, she's helping them, but they're helping her, right? And so together they make a complete person, which isn't that the best part about community? Is not that you, Heather, are your own complete person with all this wisdom? No, together we are, right? And so she was afraid to leave her home with her family until these events forced her to leave and recover these elements of herself. And so together, it seems to me, they are the chambers of her heart, so to speak, right? Like she doesn't feel that she's caring enough or has enough heart to do things or enough courage or the wit to survive in the city alone, right? And so that journey is her looking in the mirror and the mirror looking back at her, to me, and myself, right? So that's what I saw early on as a child.
And the challenge is, I mean, the film is overtly a black text and is very interested in talking to the black audience. And so the challenges that they face are going to be sort of like urban black challenges that would have been known to the audience, whether the audience would have experienced them directly or would have had family or neighbors who are experiencing these things. There's like a sweatshop. There are these people who are, they're underpaid, they're overworked.
And all lunch hours are canceled!
Oh, please, oh, beautiful one. We haven't had a lunch hour in 6 months.
Well, suffering is food for the soul. Now
this sort of economy that black people of a certain class are caught in. There's drugs and prostitutes and just all of this going on. The way in which this would have been less fantasy for the audience.
I think it did wed this idea of fantasy, but not completely transcending these things that we see every day, especially if you're from a big city. When she first lands in Oz, she lands, and where it's the Munchkin, there's these people that have been stuck in graffiti.
Toto? 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 Toto?
Right.
And it's a very dark tone to it. Kids who have grown up in a big city, regardless of ethnicity, you've passed places with graffiti on it. We know what it's like to walk down that dark alley and we're like, what do we think? Or in the subway scene that I referred to earlier, I've always been afraid of subways. There's something about going underground and then so having huge orange blobs chasing you it was my worst nightmare. it's sprinkling fantasy in with these natural things. And I think that's why it spoke to people at the time, because there were elements of the natural that were, yes, explicitly for black people, but other people who have worked in that factory setting know what it's like to be overworked and underpaid and have to come the next day and do it. And so I think that melding is actually more powerful for me.
What also stuck out to me is there are no white people in this. We're not even going to have a bad guy white person. Watching the film as a kid and there's no white people in it, did you remark upon that? Or is that something that you only realized as an adult?
Yeah, I think it was powerful for me. A book that I read often is a work curated by Natasha Marin, and it's called Black Imagination. She asks all of these different regular people, some are writers, some are poets, some are just regular black people off the street. And she asks them to imagine a world where they feel safe, valued, and loved. And so she says, tell me what, right now, what is that experience? So there's these beautiful depictions. Some would say, I could walk down the street at night and be happy. And others are remarking on the things that they would do because they feel truly safe. Others are saying, even in that fantasy place, I can't picture it. And then the opening line of the book says, close your eyes and let the white gaze disappear. And that may seem controversial or...
As a woman who knows about the male gaze, no, it doesn't. It doesn't exactly. At all.
Exactly. And so all that to say is when I saw this place that was depicted for Black people by Black people and this imagination, I think it's set in stone at an early age that race and racism would not be the foundation of my imagination. It wouldn't be the limiter on what I believed was possible. And even though till this day I encounter bigoted, hateful things, it is not the sum total of what is possible for me. And so radically reorienting and having all Black dancers, all Black people, even the villains are Black, let me know that there is a world that is possible that is free from the colonial gaze, right? It doesn't mean it's perfect. Because to your point, it's not all awesome in Oz. And so that work allows me to see some of the harm that we do to one another more clearly because there are not white people there. Because now I can see, ooh, that feels exploitative. Wow, I can actually fully see the ways that we exacerbate harms for one another without the added dynamics of other layers and other identities and social locations. And so when there's an all Black world, our humanity is not a question. And that is a powerful imagination space to explore who you really are and what other things can I be?
I want to talk about Richard Pryor's performance because I actually found it really touching. And again, another person that I didn't expect to be an actor. Yes. And he does a phenomenal job. I did not know Richard Pryor was this charismatic and this good of an actor. Mm-hmm. And it blew my mind. Mm-hmm. He is the most broken of the characters.
Please don't go. I live here all alone in terror that someone will find out that I'm a fraud.
He plays the Wiz. He's hiding. He doesn't want people to know the truth about him. He's using power and intimidation to protect himself. So I want to talk about that. What do you think?
I had only seen Richard Pryor's stand-ups and definitely saw him as charismatic, but it definitely the material that he's talking about in those is not PG. Probably saw Richard Pryor too young. What you said about him being one of the most visibly broken characters unlocks a thought that I hadn't had fully formed. He showed me as a young person, as a man, as somebody embodied in a male body, you can be broken, you can be a con artist, you can be so fearful and insecure, and you can still do the steps of repair. I think there was something powerful that I needed to see as a young boy, because most of the depictions of men around me, superheroes, whatever, popular TV, were men being macho, men dominating others, men being misogynistic. And here's this man that is hiding in the shadows, conning people in order to make a living, but it also isolated him. And I think there's something powerful in my formation as a young boy, seeing that and seeing the more that you con others and the more that you lie to others, you lose by being in the shadows where people cannot reach you and be part of your world. And so seeing that depiction helped me at an early age see I do not want to be that type of man. And I wouldn't have credit that to the Wiz, but now I think I have always had that. And I think that probably was in the background of my mind, seeing how broken he was sitting up there. If he hadn't met Dorothy, he would have been up there for more decades still.
Yeah.
And that's not where home was for him. He needed to go home too, both spiritually, emotionally, and physically. He could not stay as the Wiz in that way.
Again, Dorothy is helping and healing everyone around her, even the person who's tricked her, who's lied about what he could do for her, who's kind of coerced her into going and killing someone. And
go ahead, kill that witch. It doesn't matter. I can't send you home anyway.
Like her outrage when she gets back. I'm like, for real?
And you mean you sent us to kill Eveline? Knowing we might never come back.
She would have killed me. She would have found out I had no power and cheated to go far.
That's no excuse.
But you knew when I came here before, you couldn't send me anywhere.
I just think this grace that she's offering him is just one of the most beautiful things in the film, to say, okay, well,
I don't know what's in you. You'll have to find that out for yourself. But I do know one thing. You'll never find it in the safety of this room. I tried that all my life. It doesn't work. There's a whole world out there. And you'll have to begin by letting people see who you really are.
Also the witches. She gives grace to the witch because at the end, we find that there was another way to get home. Well, why did y'all have me out here on this journey? Right? Like, I've been fighting for my life on the yellow brick road.
Right. Well, and that's the ending of that narrative. It's in the novel or the children's stories. It's in The Wizard of Oz. It's in The Wiz, this idea that you always had with you the thing that can heal you, the thing that can save you. I guess I believe that as an adult.
I do. What do you mean by that? Yeah, I'm curious.
I've had painful experiences where I was so hurt and angry. I once said out loud, I'm not sure if I'm ready to heal because where I'm at is at least familiar, and to heal sounds really scary.
So I've been reading this book, How We Learn to Be Brave, by Bishop Marianne Budd, I believe is her name. And she talks about these moments that you're saying where you could have saved yourself, but maybe you didn't. Or, you know, what are you learning on this journey? And when I look back over my life, over the past 40 plus years of my life, there were tools inside of me to heal myself and to move forward. Actually, at every step, I was unaware of them quite often. But it's only now in hindsight that I realize much of what I needed was already present and available. Sometimes I just didn't know. And then the other part of what you're saying is the courage it takes to heal yourself. That's a journey. That is like following the yellow brick road. And perhaps that is what the whole imagery is about, is this journey towards healing and wholeness. And it is scary. Sometimes when you're going on that journey, you become more chaotic. You become more emotional. You become more full of rage. It's not all like, you know, meditation and roses. It's
not a path where you're just getting better and getting better and getting better, right?
And that's the scary part, is who you're becoming on that path to healing. Sometimes it's very ugly what comes out of your soul, but it is not linear. Yeah, we all have those journeys, right?
Yeah. My childhood film that meant so much to me was Annie. If you can.
Loved Annie.
That might make sense to you. I had the hair, I had the perm, but I also really responded to this idea, someone's going to come and take me out of the chaos and protect me. And that to me was so important. And even YouTube knows me so well, it recently recommended to me Sarah Jessica Parker singing Annie songs from when she was like 15. And of course, I stopped and watched it, and I sang along, and I had like this emotional reaction to it of, oh, I remember that desire, you know, as an adult who's hopefully healed somewhat. I'm not in that place anymore, but it's so familiar. I recognize it so much that I still have the emotions.
It's so funny because you were talking about The Wiz being this explicitly Black text. And it is, right? But then there are these themes that resonate even outside of this one ethnic group. Annie was that for me. There's no part of Annie's life that was like similar to my, like, no part of her social location, but it spoke to me as a child. And I think part of the poverty and feeling unloved and unlovely, there was something that was powerful about that storytelling that transcended the particularities of her life, that I felt like that too. And I wanted my own Daddy Warbucks to come help me, you know, like, get me out of here. And so I longed for redemption too. That was something that strengthened in me in watching Annie or Pippi Longstocking or Anne of Green Gables, all these ones that have no, those characters don't look like me at all, but there were themes that were so precious to me that I was wrestling with in, will somebody adopt me, find me lovely? I did and still do. I'm on the healing journey.
Thanks to Robert for revealing the spirituality of The Wiz. I love talking with him about these kinds of texts that form us when we're young. Robert mentioned Malcolm X and Roots, and its important TV and film that have shaped the Black folks of his generation. It reminded me of the popularity and importance of the Nicholas Brothers, two skilled and audacious dancers from the 1930s and 40s, whose hold on the imagination of Black people 100 years ago was so strong that Black people lined up around the block to see the several Hollywood films they appeared in. The story goes that audiences told each other where in the films the brothers appeared, and folks would show up at the theater, buy a ticket for that 10-minute segment, and then head back to work once the Nicholas Brothers disappeared from screen. The audiences didn't care about the rest of the movie, often featuring white characters and white stories, that the Nicholas Brothers had appeared in. They just wanted to see that Black excellence on screen. You can find clips of the Nicholas Brothers on YouTube now. Go check them out because they will literally renew your hope in humanity. Mainstream films with and about Black people are more prevalent than they have ever been. In fact, Apple TV has a two-part documentary series called Number One on the Call Sheet that examines the careers of Black actors, produced by Jamie Foxx and Kevin Hart. As a film nerd, I loved hearing what films were inspirational for these actors as they began their careers, but also what they felt their greatest challenges and accomplishments were. But Black people were never waiting for mainstream filmmakers to make movies about them. You may have heard of the racist film Birth of a Nation from 1915. Directed by D.W. Griffith, it adapted the novel The Klansman, which portrayed the Ku Klux Klan as a necessary and valiant corrective for society in the Reconstruction South. Novelist Oscar Micheaux responded with his own 1920 film, Within Our Gates, produced by the Black production company Lincoln Motion Picture Company, founded by Noble and George Perry Johnson, which had been producing films for Black audiences in Los Angeles. Other recommendations today? Well, Annie, obviously, or E.T., or Star Wars, or whatever was the film that made your heart swell, that made you long for that world on the screen when you were a small person. Watching the movies that claimed us when we were younger helps us understand that younger self and perhaps offer that younger self some grace. We may find these movies don't appeal to us any longer or don't stand up to our current ideals, but that doesn't mean a review of them isn't of value, and maybe even healing. VoiceOver is edited by Aaliyah Alexander and is a production of BYU Radio. I'm your host, Heather Bigley.